Good evening. Before we begin, a disclaimer and a warning for tonight's episode. Tonight's broadcast may be unsuitable for children, adults, and living creatures.
Listener's discretion is advised.
I've been keeping my ear to the streets.
Worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Joey Stubbs. What's going on, Joey?
You know, for somebody who makes his living on radio, you have a hard time stringing together words. You all right?
I was trying to make a point. I'm using football as a soliloquy.
You really have a way with words.
Ratboy didn't even want to call in last week since you weren't here. So.
And the very first person that was ever in the ring was an amateur. It's Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman was not an NCAA champion.
Oh, my God.
I am heartbroken. I don't know why you're laughing.
Albert, you're a freeloader.
It is. It's buzzed around the world. Twitter blew up. Facebook blew up.
It's the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. What's going on, Jimmy?
Well, you never know. Telephone, telegraph, and tell the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, we're full of all kind of surprises.
This is a honky-tonk man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time in the WWE, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
You know why you don't want me on your radio show? Because you know the ratings will go through the roof, you'd make a lot of money, and that way you keep me off, that way you will stay always broken.
VOC Nation Radio Network, Wrestling with History, always live on Wednesday nights, 9:30 Eastern Time. And I told you everybody last week that I lost another co-host. It's been a recurring theme throughout my career in radio. It happens all the time. But I went back, and for 1 week only, before the show changes formats, and I'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes, but for 1 week only, I reached back way into the past. Went back about 10 years to my very first pro wrestling co-host. He's going to be with me for the duration of the show. Namar Wells, what's up, man? You're back.
Yeah, I keep quitting, and you keep calling me back for these one-off specials. It's unbelievable.
There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
Apparently, especially for you, because you keep coming back, no matter. I don't understand why you love doing this, but we're here today, and we're going to talk wrestling.
I come back and, I leave. I get upset. I get burned out. And then I wait. This time I waited 5 years and I came back. And then all of a sudden I start looking at things that I need to improve in terms of, things that we have here at VOC Nation. And I start spending money. And money keeps adding up and adding up. And the next time, the next thing I know, the hundreds turn into thousands. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I doing? I'm ready to quit again.
Bruce, if you're really willing to throw away money, you can just give me a couple of hundred right now and save yourself the stress. Come on, go for it.
I came back to do this show. Brady had asked me if I wanted to come back and help out.
Oh, yeah, how did I miss this? Mentioned her.
Everything's great. She's the thing that we agreed on is I can do this if it's just one night a week and no conventions.
Wow, that's what Brady the stipulation he put on you?
No. That wasn't Brady. That was my wife said no conventions. I cannot do
conventions. Yeah, when I said Mrs., I meant Brady. Where's Brady? And what's his thoughts on all of this?
Brady was, he had his show in the room, and he ran the network basically by himself, and he asked me to come back and do a show and try to work together to get listenership back up where we wanted it, and it's worked. We've done a good job. We're doing, I think we're up to about 12,000 a week in terms of regular listeners. It's very good. Very good.
12,000 people have nothing else better to do on a Wednesday. But we're here to entertain those 12,000 with no lies. We're going to make it very nice for them. We're going to go retro and then compare to some modern, and I'm going to play the old fogey stuck in the past.
It's different, Namar, than it was when we did this, when we started out, we were doing AM radio, and people could only listen live. The podcast thing was still new. So now people can listen whenever they want, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, there's Spotify, there's all kinds of ways to listen to this show, and that's what they do. They download it, they subscribe, they leave us all kinds of negative comments. It's great. I love hearing all the bad things
We really have to get these people some better hobbies in life, some type of spiritual fulfillment. But we'll fill the holes in their lives for one night only, at least you and I, and you guys will continue on filling those great big holes in their lives and making them feel nice and warm and fuzzy on the inside. Talking about professional wrestling, which to me is dead. I don't get why you guys are still this heavy into professional wrestling, modern professional wrestling. What is attractive about the product at all? Tell me, please, because I don't know.
Namar, that's why I agreed to come back and do this show. I said to Brady, I will come back and do a show, just one show a week, but I don't watch the current product regularly. I'll peek in every once in a while. But I just don't have any interest. They all look the same. The storylines are generic. There's no edge. There's nothing. There's no creativity. And I'm just not a fan. And I mean, I still find myself following it because I just have a deep love for professional wrestling. But I agree with you. I wanted to talk about the past because I live in the past. I watch the WWE Network. I watch YouTube of old Wrestling Challenge and Superstars stuff. That's what I love. And the stories were so great in the 80s and the early 90s. That's where wrestling was to me. It's unmatched. You can't go back. You can't do it again. It'll never be done again. And it's just not the same.
I will have to agree with that. I think, and it's not even saying that they have to try to recreate what was done before, but they just have no creativity to create something new or to figure out how to really keep wrestling flavorful, which is why it's, you know, dying in a sense. And it really just makes you wonder. And then, you know, it's funny because I thought, you know, with AEW coming on board, I thought, wow, this competition is going to be great. It's really going to help wrestling. And then I watched a couple of matches from AEW, and I was completely disgusted. So nobody's learned anything.
Well, it's funny because I think it was Vince Russo. You know, he's incredibly polarizing, and most people just hate him. It's not like there's any opposite pole. But he was saying that the wrestling of today and the people who are the hardcore wrestling fans, you know, they like the five-star matches, flip around in the ring, do a bunch of moves that you know are quote-unquote fake. Now, and when I say fake, I don't want to offend anybody. I'm saying they're completely choreographed. And in the old days, they would tell a story in the ring, and you would, for just that moment while you're watching the show, you would suspend your disbelief. You would feel like it was real. And what they're doing now is just ultra choreographed, and it's like the Japanese style of wrestling where they just want a five-star match every single time, and it's not about a story and just really showing emotion. And I think that's what's missing.
Right. There's no drama. There's no suspense. The high spots mean nothing, which really, like, I mean, what's the point of having a finisher or a special move if, you know, the guy's going to kick out of it, you know, 2 to 3 times within a normal match on regular TV? There's nothing left for the audience, and that's part of the problem, you know. And again, it's not about being an old fogey, but you have to understand the core of what wrestling has always been. It's a drama, and a lot of the drama, yes, some of it is in promos, but the majority of it is in the ring, and that's what I love. I love that old school psychology of how to tell a story and how to build hype and excitement, and you know, and I mean, for what it's worth, I guess that's kind of sort of why I'm stuck. I mean, you know, I just, you know, acquired some new videos, and I was watching those. And really, and don't get me wrong, I don't like all of the old wrestling. It's not like I can sit through every, you know, WWF Prism weekly or monthly special from the Spectrum or every Madison Square Garden's, you know, monthly special. I can't sit through all of it. You know, a lot of it is boring, but for those that excelled, you understand why they were the leaders in the business, because they knew how to tell a story. And that's what's
you
lost.
Like
you know, I... Go ahead.
No, you don't like a nice 20-minute match with Paul Roma and SD Jones?
Oh. You know, I got to give FC Jones. I actually seen a couple of matches with him where I was surprised he was a lot more than I remembered. But as far as sitting through a normal FC Jones match, absolutely not. Hey,
sorry,
you got to give him credit. He did make the Coliseum video intro. He does have a small segment in that where he flips over somebody's back and pulls them down for a pin. You got to give FC credit. And he's a Philadelphia native, Bruce, your old hometown.
Lamar, did you say Coliseum video?
Yes.
That's where Andre the Giant body slammed Kamala in that steel cage.
In Canada, absolutely. Great stuff. And you know what? For all you listeners out there, you get 12,000 people listening. For all of you guys that might be old school hardcore, now I have an extensive collection of videotapes, DVDs, and files on my computer. But what I'm looking for to see if anybody could find me the alternate Coliseum video outro. A lot of people don't know. We all know this, the regular Coliseum video intro, but they actually use that same music for an outro with different wrestling clips. That's what I'm looking for. I've not been able to find that for many years. It was on YouTube 1,000 years ago. But can somebody find that? And I think I only ever saw it on one Coliseum videotape. I'm looking for that. Hook a brother up.
Well, let's tell people, if you want to contact the show, obviously, if you want to call the show live, you're listening live, it's 657-383-1666, 657-383-1666. You can tweet the show at VOC Nation, and we'll get that during the week. I monitor at Bruce VOC right here while we're broadcasting live. We got some calls on the board, but if you can help Namar out, and you find that clip, just send us an email to admin@vocnation.com, and I will make sure it gets to the big guy.
Indeed.
Do me a favor, Namar. Hook you up. So, Namar, we're talking today about mainly the 80s, because you and I have a deep-seated passion for the 80s. When we started together in radio, we did Ringside Radio, and our goal then was to talk about some of the classic stuff. And we had a good time for a couple of years. Then it all fell apart. But we'll leave that alone for today. But we talk a lot about.
We talked about it extensively in the archives. We did a whole, what was it, hour long or hour and a half long special on it.
You know, it's funny. Remember? I told Brady. I do, and I told Brady you have to take down most of the archives because of my career. I used to be a lot more aggressive back on the air and offensive, and I just I want all that stuff burned.
Listen, yeah, you know, it's funny. You find that as you move farther up in your career. And you realize the way how PC the world is and how your name can get out there on the internet, it is a very scary situation. So trust me, there are a lot of times where I had some very hard comments, not even necessarily about wrestling or part of the show, even though I do have a couple of things I would like to be removed as far as the show is concerned. But, you know, there's a couple of things where I signed my name and I'm like, oh, wow, I don't think I should have done that. You know, it could really come back to haunt you with the whole everybody's a victim and everything's offensive in the world today, so you have to be especially careful.
Absolutely. Well, today we're talking about the 80s. We're talking about from WrestleMania 1 all the way through 6 when it was mostly Hulkamania time in professional wrestling. You had Ric Flair and the Horsemen over there in NWA land, and that's going to set us up, Namar, because this show is going to change formats in a couple of weeks starting October the 2nd. I'm not going to announce my co-host yet, but my co-host is a former member of the WWF backstage, behind the scenes, and we're trying to give fans a little bit like Bruce Pritchard does, like Sean Mooney does. There's some great podcasts out there, and we've started to recruit some of that talent to VOC Nation. And I'm very excited to be changing the format and giving fans a look inside the WWF from the 80s. So I think it's a great time for you and I to set the table and talk some 80s with the peeps out there.
I know who your new co-host is.
You can't tell.
Listen, allow me to break the news, everybody. Mean Gene Okerlund is going to be co-hosting with Bruce Wirt on the show October 2nd. Be there. How about that?
We brought in a white noise machine, and you have to listen for Gene through the white noise. It's like that movie.
No, I mean, tell the truth. We dug him up. We dug him up. We did. We know it's offensive to some, but we dug him up. We got his body. We reanimated it. He's there, and you're going to love it.
All right.
Nonstop efforts, just over and over again. That'll be the only thing. We're going to put a we're going to hook a phone up and stick it in his mouth, and then we'll just have a bunch of sound bites and have him talk through the sound bites. We're going totally offensive, but we're going to get Mean Gene in the studio with Bruce Wirt October 2nd. Be
it
there.
It will not be Gene Okerlund, but it will be somebody who worked extensively with Gene Okerlund, and you'll have to tune in. We will break that news tomorrow, next week, right here at 9:30 Eastern Time. We're going to do a best of show in preparation for the October 2nd changing of the guard here, and I will stay. I committed when I signed back on with Brady. I committed to at least work here again for a year, spend a lot of my money, and potentially ruin another marriage. That's what VOC Nation does for me.
Absolutely.
All right, Namar, I got a full board. I got a bunch of people waiting on hold, so we'll get to the calls in a second. But before that, I just want to set the stage. So I want to read this card to you. This is WrestleMania 1. And
sure.
I want to tell you, if it wasn't the first ever attempt to do something like this, tell me if you think this is a card that would have been successful at any other time. Tito Santana versus The Executioner, who was Buddy Rose. King Kong Bundy versus Special Delivery Jones. You had Ricky Steamboat versus Matt Bourne. Bruno Sammartino accompanying David Sammartino against Brutus Beefcake. Greg Valentine against JYD. And by the way, the debut of Jimmy Hart in the WWF, our good buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Volkov against Mike Rotunda and Barry Windham. And then you got the main events: Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd, the battle of the slow bodies, and Wendy Richter against Cyndi Lauper. That was interesting, right? And Hulk Hogan against Rowdy. Hulk Hogan and Mr. T.
No, wait, Piper Wendy Richter North. Didn't fight Cyndi Lauper. You said
oh,
Wendy
I'm
Richter
sorry.
And?
Ooh. Yeah.
It's okay.
Sorry about that.
You want something that would have made WrestleMania a heck of a lot more interesting than when you were bad for Cyndi Lauper.
But listen, outside of Hogan and Piper in the main event with Mr. T and all the fanfare with the celebrities and people wanting to see Andre and Stud with mostly Bobby Heenan making that match, nothing else on the card is really exciting.
That's the truth. One of the things I have to say now, WrestleMania was monumental. It definitely was the absolute biggest game changer, or one of them in wrestling history. But that I think the first two cards were very weak. I am not really a fan of WrestleMania 1, even the big match with Hogan. As much as I love Mr. T and I appreciate what he did for the WWF at the time, he was not a good wrestler. And, I mean, the most he did was, like, the fireman carry and the takedown. Andre and Stud, which is a shame because, for some reason, if you're I'm a big Andre the Giant fan, and I have many of his matches, and he deteriorated drastically from 83 to 84. But then if you want to see a great match with Andre against Stud, you have to go to the matches preceding WrestleMania 1 where they really got it on. WrestleMania 1, that match between them, the body slam match, was very weak. It was very slow, not one of their best. And Andre had already slammed him 100 times before that. A notable one was when Andre slammed Stud, and I think it was 83, at the Philadelphia Spectrum steel cage match. And Andre the Giant goes up on the ropes and jumps off the top rope on top of Big John Studd, and that is pretty epic to watch. If you want to see a good match between those two, go there, because WrestleMania 1 is weak. I don't even know who the other half of those group, the Executioner, good Lord. Terrible.
Buddy Rhodes.
Terrible.
Nuts. Well, you know, the funny thing about Andre and Studd is that Andre hated John Studd, hated him. That came out. I've heard lots of people on the inside talk about that. Andre didn't like the big guys. He thought that they were taking away from his lore, and Studd just was not somebody that he liked.
Well, you know, that's one of the things, because I've heard conflicting reports. The majority of them is that Andre hated Studd. That is definitely something that you hear most often. But King Kong Bundy, in his shoot interview, he said that, you know, John, that he thought Andre loved John because John was just so, you know, he was just really, in a way, a suck-up. But you got to give them credit, because whatever it was, that made magic. You know, Big John Studd, a giant guy himself, I mean, he was enormous himself. And those two big colossal guys was like a King Kong versus Godzilla situation, and it was pretty epic. I love those matches. Some of their better ones were actually outside of WrestleMania, before and after, surprisingly.
And well, that's the cool thing about the WWE Network. There's so much footage that you can go back and watch that you just didn't see every day. I mean, if you weren't in the Philadelphia market, you didn't see the Spectrum stuff. If you weren't in New York, you didn't see MSG. Boston, there's so many good things that fans have access to, and that's cool, along with YouTube. I mean, YouTube has tons of priceless stuff.
Absolutely. One of the things I'm thankful for, though, is the only thing I do not like with the WWE Network, obviously, is we all appreciate the cleaned up footage, but there's a lot of redubbing, which I do not like, which I do understand. But I got to give it to the credit to those fans who actually have those old Boston Garden specials, or, you know, the monthly tapes, and the Madison Square Garden Philadelphia Spectrum tapes, where, you know, you actually get to see and hear the original audio. And those I really do enjoy. And even some fans have taken upon themselves to dub the original audio over the cleaned up WWE Network footage. But you're right. That was a time when things were super localized. The After magazine days. Shout out to the wonderful Bill After. We miss him. And
hey.
Gotta love Bill. Now, there's a guy who has weathered wrestling longer than you and I have. How he's done it, I do not know, because Bill's been around forever. He's seen the good and the bad, and he's stuck in there. Lord have mercy.
I tell you what, Lamar, all I like to do is see those men in their undies.
You know what? I think that's what it is. I think that's what it is. He, you know, and when is he going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame? You know, he's
I
a
tried.
Speaking of which, you said you did try. I forgot about that. You did try. Wow, taking me back. Yep. It
Whole
didn't work, Bruce.
All right, I'm going to get a mutiny on my hand. 657-383-1666. I'm going to take first call. I think this is Justin. Dustin, you're on VOC Nation Radio Network. What's up, Justin?
How you doing, Bruce? How are you?
What's up, man?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Namar, you got like a little fan or something going in the background there. It's murderous.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
No, gee, I don't buy that.
How you
Justin,
doing, Lamar?
What's on
How
your
are
mind?
You?
I'm good, sir. Good, sir. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, it was nice talking to you also. Raw was pretty good this week. It wasn't too bad. It was okay. Just getting tired of seeing some of the same storylines. Mostly with SmackDown, mostly getting tired of the Daniel Bryan, the Rowan, and the whole Roman Reigns feud. now it's just like a, it's almost like one of those murder mysteries. It's like, who murdered the old lady or whatever? Was it the mailman,
the milkman,
or the post office?
Here's the thing.
Like, really?
The stupid thing about that angle, and I don't want to talk a whole lot about the new stuff because I don't really watch it, but the thing is,
so
they do this angle with who ran down Roman Reigns, and instead of somebody calling the cops, they're asking people to vote on the WWE universe. Like, like if somebody attempted to be murdered, wouldn't you just call the police and have them investigate? Why are the fans doing?
No, I kind. It's almost like if you see a guy get hit by a bus, hey, was it the driver or the other guy? Hey, let's take a vote on it. Was he hit or what happened? Now you call the cops. It's like WWE's. That's why I try to. I get tired of it. It's just. It's being too watered down anymore. That's why I totally fell asleep during SmackDown, and I was like, thank God. 2 hours of sleep is better than watching this bullshit.
Apparently, so did the writer that Eric Bischoff hired. Did you see that? Lamar, did you see that article? So Bischoff is back in charge of SmackDown. He hires this writer from the motorcycle show, Sons of Anarchy, and the guy fell asleep his first week on the job.
Get the heck out. No, I did not see that. And, wow. I mean,
I fall asleep if Eric Bischoff was my boss, too.
Oh,
I mean, his personality is bland. It's like no sense of humor, no nothing. It's like, what's he gonna do with WWE SmackDown? Drive that into the ground like he did to WCW? Hate to say it.
Well, you know, I gotta give Bischoff a little bit of credit. You know, he did the impossible. He did what no other person could do. I think Bischoff has talent, but, you know, like with everything, there's a limit. I mean, look, there are people that have utter disdain for Vince and what he's done, but because it's a staple, it survives. It's like a Marvel movie. They can put out a piece of dog crap and people will still go to see it, and it's a billion-dollar film, even though they're producing the same fluff, boring stuff over and over again because the name has become a brand and a staple. And I think that's part of wrestling. Until people really learn to step aside from the product instead of force watching it, you know, then I think maybe we could see some big changes. But, you know, Bischoff, you know, it's, again, forget the writers. You do need, you know, you think about it, and I hate to go back to the 80s because I'm the old man in the room now. But, you know, you had a few people directing the stories, but the wrestlers themselves were able to cultivate the story. So, you know, they may pit, Tito Santana's going against Macho Man. But, you know, they did their own promos. There was an idea of what to say, but they were also able to really embellish and put more into it where everything is so super scripted, so you're not even getting a full personality from the wrestlers anymore. It's a lot of dead air, guys.
Yeah, well, I was waiting for Justin to jump in there. Justin, what do you think? Do you watch the 80s stuff on the WWE Network? I don't know how old you are, but were you around back then? Do you have a favorite moment from the 80s, favorite angle?
I would say that's like old before my time. I'm 28 years old. I mean, I'll give it to you guys. You guys throw out some matches, and I'll try checking them out this weekend.
All right, all we do is go back to WrestleMania.
I mean, look. Just go back to WrestleMania 3 and 6. And I hate to, you know, I'm the Hogan guy, so I was bringing up Hogan. But, you know, part of what made those matches great is that you were able to build up an entity, two separate entities that were, you know, big. And you wait for the big payoff, and you really deliver. WrestleMania 3, you had a great build-up. You know, Andre had his own career. Hogan had his own career. And to this big, massive blast brawl, and the same thing with Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, and you gave people a real payoff. you know, and one of the things, you know, Hogan and Andre had a couple of return matches, but there weren't also a bunch of return matches either, which is also a good thing.
Well, I would say you mentioned those two, but how about the year-long build for Hogan and Savage? And it kind of started when the partnership formed, and then just little subtle things, you know, Hogan with a hand on Liz's ass or touching her around the midsection as different parts, different matches happen, and that exploded into that WrestleMania 5 match, and they were great. Great, great build and great storyline, great segments. I think that was one of the greatest things about the entire decade was Hogan and Savage.
Listen, that's an understatement. And to be honest with you, in terms of a build-up, that's greater than Hogan and Warrior and Hogan and Andre. Because like you said, that was a year-long. First of all, they were enemies for such a long time. Then them becoming friends and Macho developing a new fan base of his own. And like you said, the little small things and just how it escalated. I mean, that was one heck of a ride. And they told that over a year's time, which was incredible. And you're right, the blow up was, I mean, and then you got to give credit to Hogan and Macho because they played their parts unbelievably, especially Macho Man. I mean, he really looked pained in some of those interviews, like Hogan really hurt his life. It was unreal.
That's you mentioned about the scripted promos, and that's, I think that's what's missing today is these guys. So back in those days, those guys were an extension of themselves, and they really felt the character, and it was all coming from their heart. And when they did a promo, they felt it. And now it's just written for them. It's not necessarily who they are. They're trying to turn these wrestlers into Hollywood actors, and it's not the same.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've always championed is that everybody had a different looking gimmick. You know, nowadays, most often, you know, most of the guys that are wrestlers are all, you know, they're thin with this particular kind of build with that greasy, stringy, disgusting looking hair and with the tattoos. And it's all very boring. You know, what you think about it, even into the 90s when you had just, I mean, the 90s took it a little bit too far. I mean, you had, you know, trash men and nonsense like and Dennis, you know, and ex-convicts, and it got to be a repo men, you know. It got to be a little bit ridiculous, but you had a range, and a range of differences will always give you better options. I mean, you had extreme characters. I don't like Abdullah the Butcher as a wrestler. You know, he's not a wrestler. He can't wrestle. He never could. But look at what he offered. It was something totally different than, say, a Honky Tonk Man or, you know, or Duke the Dumpster Drosy. You know, it was something totally different, and that's what's missing. These guys don't have, you know, you don't have to go to the extreme where it becomes cartoony, but there's not enough diversity in wrestling.
They say to me, Jimmy, I want to be a wrestler? And I say, go out and get yourself some long hair, get yourself a bunch of tattoos, and learn how to flip over the top rope, and you can do anything you want, baby.
That is a Jimmy classic if I ever heard one.
All right, let me go.
Really,
back
and
to
for
the
all
phone.
The people listening out there, that is something that Jimmy Hart actually did say to us when we were running around with him for a time. Bruce still continues with him. But he did say that to us when we were out, and he was not in a truly negative way, but he was mocking the current product and what you need to make it. And you have to make sure you can do 1,000 flips because that's also what's required.
1,000. It's like a dance. It's a choreographed dance.
Absolutely. It's like forget the ice capades. Let's go, you know, watch grown men dance and flip around. You know, it's like, you know, a more athletic version of cats or some nonsense.
All right. You'll like the next two guys I got punched up. I got to take a break in a second, but before we go to the break, I want to get the first part of this out of the way because I know he's been waiting for a while. Las Vegas, Nevada. Malcolm, what's up, pal? You're in the VOC Nation Radio Network.
You guys are talking about old school. And hey, Neymar, nice to hear from
you.
Hey,
Malcolm. Hey, you're not on Facebook anymore. I can't find you. Where'd you go, buddy?
Somebody's got my Facebook and my Twitter accounts hacked. But don't worry about it, Namar. I'm going to build my own website, and anybody can go there anytime you want. Videos.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to tell you, brother, it is a pleasure to hear from you again. It's been a very long time. I always worry about you, so I'm glad to hear you healthy and strong and still in the wrestling game.
Bruce Niemeyer, I want to tell you about the Monday night game in Oakland. It was the funniest Raider game I ever went to. There were these two guys. They're carrying this big sign. They got a big head of Antonio Brown, and they got him in diapers, and it says AB, the crybaby. And all night long, they're going, F-U-A-B. And there's a guy, he's a black guy, right? He's on the other side of the steps, and he's looking over and gives me a thumbs up, and he goes, hey, Malcolm, this is for you. He goes, hey, get your monkey ass out of Oakland.
You are famous, man.
Malcolm.
Yeah, WrestleMania. You know, there's so many great moments from 1 to 6. I love the first WrestleMania because Billy Martin was part of it. Pat Patterson almost got into a fight with Roddy Piper, you know, because Pat was the second referee and Muhammad Ali was outside the ring. And Piper almost got into a fist fight with Pat Patterson. And I was loving that, you know, because I knew Pat from my childhood. And I was just starting to get to know Roddy Piper. And it was, you know, I told Roddy when I met him, I said, that was really funny when you almost fought Pat Patterson. And he goes, you know, he said, well, we had a good time. Liberace had the bell. But I think WrestleMania 2, to me, they have hit three different areas. The New York, the Nassau Coliseum, or whatever it was, in Long Island, they had the Rosemont Horizon. And then they had Los Angeles. And Velvet McIntyre, she tried to do a splash and moolah move, you know, and she blew the wind out of her. The Bulldogs took the titles from Beefcake and Valentine. There was a skinny guy holding on to Beefcake's leg. He was trying to get in the ring. Beefcake told me this year, him and Valentine, he said, that was a referee. And I said, he was too skinny to be a referee. But, you know, if Beefcake could have got in there, I don't think the Bulldogs would have taken the title. The Funk Brothers against Junkyard Dog and Tito Santana. I mean, the dog was really slow, but man, in that match, he just picked it up. I mean,
what's your favorite? Give me your favorite feud of the entire '80s, Malcolm.
It's Piper and Hogan. It's got to be
Piper and Hogan.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing is, they really never had a one-on-one blow off until that terrible run they had in WCW, right?
Yeah, well, it started when Hogan and Piper met on MTV, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, and Mr. T got involved with Paul Orndorff and Snuka and Orton. Hogan took Orton's cast in an arm. I talked to Bob about this and called for Alley Club. I said, I like it when Hogan kicked your arm. He slammed it on top of the turnbuckle. Like somebody took the turnbuckle off and he drove it on the steel rod or something like that. And then Orndorff comes in there and Mean Gene and Gorilla are doing the broadcast. And Gorilla says, he goes, what's he saying? Mean Gene goes, what's he saying? He goes, he's taking his place. And Gorilla goes, give me a break. I mean,
there's nothing like that stuff.
A lot of the stuff, Bruce, that happened that was great in those days didn't happen at WrestleMania. A lot of it happened before WrestleMania, like at SummerSlam, or everybody had to build up for WrestleMania. But, I mean, and the match between the Macho Man and Hogan, the Megapods explode at Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, you know, our president hosted that in '89. You know, that was one of the best matches ever. I mean, Elizabeth got involved. They had bodyguards around her. They had these big bodyguards around Hulk Hogan, you know, taking him to the ring. And, you know, it was just classic. I mean, I actually think that was a better match when Hogan met Savage at WrestleMania 5 than the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. Because those guys matched up well. It's like when Hogan fell outside the ring at WrestleMania 6 on his knee, on his side Vince, you know, I think, you know, when the Warrior had him down, he couldn't kick out, you know, so that's
yeah.
why he lost. I think he was going to win the match, you know, but he couldn't
yeah.
kick out.
Hang in there, Malcolm. Hang in there. I'm going to put you on the sidelines for a second. Namar, the Hogan WrestleMania big match formula was very much the same. And sometimes Malcolm gets carried away. I gotta give him a break on the sidelines for a second. The formula was the same. It was you know, Hogan coming out. They do the lockup. They do the shoves, and then they go outside the ring for a little bit. And it was a very, very good, like, nice and slow paced formula, but not slow like methodical, but slow in the fact that it told a story and you really were holding on every moment.
You really were, and it was like that for a couple of wrestlers that really knew how to, like, as you said, tell a story in the ring, and that's what makes it worthwhile. I'll give you, for instance, superstar Billy Graham was an absolute awful, awful wrestler. I mean, he literally was one of the worst I've ever seen in my life. But he knew how to entertain. He knew what to say. He knew what to do. And sometimes that is enough to get you by. Now, granted, we all want a more athletic and a person that really does know how to wrestle. But those guys knew, like you said, knew how to tell a story. And sometimes, you know, like, for instance, Hogan and The Rock was a classic formula match. And if you, those first, what, 10 minutes of that match are the best parts of that match. It's just the intensity and taking your time. But part of that comes with building characterization over a couple of years, and that's what's missing. And I understand, like, back in the days, you know, you had territory, so, but guys still maintained a, you know, for those that could keep a character, they maintained that wrestler and they come into a new territory, and they knew how to work it. What works in today's market is that you know where you have a singular entity for wrestling, you know, you build a person up, and you have to really take time to invest in that character and take it as far as you can take it. And that really just doesn't always happen today, and I think it was a lot of missed opportunities. I remember when I think his name was Dolph Ziggler, when he was getting a who was the guy, Bruce, that was, he was a reality wrestler, and then he became a professional wrestler.
Miz.
Yeah, The Miz. I remember when The Miz had he was doing really good. I think he had won the championship, but he had a lot of momentum behind him, and they just didn't know how to follow through. And that's the problem. They don't know how to follow through. We know the audience is different. First of all, the audience knows too much. They want to know too much. You don't need to know everything. Everybody talks too much. That's number one. People know the outcomes before it even happens. So people need to step back. The chatty conversation needs to stop, and we need better buildup of characters, and people, they need not to always meet. Unfortunately, you know, back in the 80s, when, like you said, there were different stations that carried local wrestling, so you didn't always see the match between so-and-so and so-and-so. So when they did have the big clash, you could appreciate it more. So they have to figure a way to work that out with being on weekly across the nation.
Amen. Yeah, I agree with you. It's I think that's the overexposure in TV really does play into the problems of today. And we'll carry that. I want to talk about that a little bit more on the other side. You got Rat Boy. He's been waiting patiently for a little while. And your call as well at 657-383-1666. Got some tweets that I'll read on the other side of the break, too. Namar, we'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll keep talking about the glory years of professional wrestling back in the 80s. Great to hang out with, Namar. I want to hang out with you as well. This is VOC Nation Wrestling with History, worldwide in the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Live from the In the Room studios, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Samoa Joe, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The VOC Wrestling Nation worldwide at VOCNation.com. Joey Styles is taking terminology from this show, and he is sending it back to the WWE.
Well, I will make sure when I say worldwide going forward that I include VOC Nation.
voice of choice wrestling nation.
Heard worldwide.
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 Worldwide, baby.
Worldwide, man.
Worldwide.
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 On VOCNation.com.
This is the phenomenal one, AJ Styles.
Jim Bodie, the artist formerly known as Kazan.
This is Eugene.
This is Chris
Jericho. This is Sci-Fi's original vampire, Kevin Thorne.
Hey, guys. This is Serena D.
This is Madison Rain.
This is A-Double Austin Aries, the hardcore icon. Incredible.
Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist and TNA superstar, Kurt Angle.
And you are listening to In the Room.
The best talk show that you can hear.
Tuesday night, 9, 8 central, VOCNation.com. TheBradyHicks.com, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information.
Welcome, WCW Retro.
WCW Retro.
WCW Retro.
The Maestro of Wrestling.
We live the memories with us, good, bad, or indifferent, for WCW Retro. We'll have a different topic every show.
WCW Retro.
Right here on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
VOC Nation Wrestling with History Worldwide in the VOC Nation Radio Network. Follow us at VOC Nation. Follow me at Bruce VOC. You can call the show live if you're listening. It's Wednesday, 9:30 Eastern Time. Live until 11, 657-3316-66. Namar, you've been on and off for, 10 years in VOC Nation. And have you seen a deterioration in the quality of the commercial production since I left?
It all sounds the same. It's an absolute mess. Well, you know, the VOC Nation was never known for fantastic production quality for commercials. You know, it was really just the same two guys and, voice modulation. And hoping people were foolish enough to know the difference. Did we get you?
Karen did record a couple of spots for us back in the day. And
it was good.
You know. But Shelly Martinez, she was our guest a few weeks ago, and she used to do a show here every week, and she was listening in through the break, and she's like, "Oh my God, the commercials are the same as they've been for 5 years." It's funny. But we're thankful.
Nanny Ray and King David recite them word for word.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, if we didn't have fabulous sponsors like Metro Media Studios and the Duncan School of Driving, where would we be?
Same place.
Real quick, before I get to Rat Boy Namar, I just want to remind everybody that coming up tomorrow, we have a double dose of top talent here at VOC Nation. So Wes Briscoe will debut his show with Big Ace. Wes is the son of Jerry Briscoe, and he is coming exclusively to VOC Nation, and he'll be live every Thursday.
Awesome.
This week he's got Marty Scurll as his guest from Ring of Honor. And we're excited to have Wes join the VOC Nation family. And
Bruce,
then tomorrow night.
Have you heard about Brian Knobbs and his medical issue?
I have not. You have to enlighten me.
Yeah, he has a medical issue. And like all of the wonderful wrestlers of the 80s, he's asking for donations. You know, that's become a common thread is being able to pay for the medical bills of those people that entertained you when you were a kid. And, so I just wanted to know if you would go look up that information and donate to Brian Knobbs to help him with his upcoming procedure.
Now, wait a minute. Considering that he chased you around a hotel about 5 or 6 years ago and kept calling you JYD. Do you think that you'll donate to his medical costs?
Who, me? Oh, no, no, no. Listen, I'm already out on disability myself after surgery. So, you know, I'm just maintaining. But for all of you healthy individuals, you know, getting that full 100% of your paycheck, I figured that it'd be a wonderful opportunity for you guys to donate a couple of $1,000 to help Brian Knobs get back up on his feet.
Well, listen, the sad part about that is that these guys destroyed their bodies for the fans and for Vince McMahon. And there's no medical insurance that WWE provides to these guys. And, you know, that's one of the sad things throughout the years is that you see a lot of people, they didn't make as much money back then. There was no salary. There was no downside guarantee. And these guys also weren't taught how to manage their money. So it's
I got to disagree. I have to disagree to an extent. And I do have a contrast that I think is interesting. They made a lot of money. I mean, if you think comparatively, if these guys made $250,000 in 1987 or 1990 money, that is a lot more than $250,000, which is still a considerable amount of money today. You know, so they made a lot of money. We know they had to foot a lot of the bill in a lot of cases. You know, I think I heard Tony Atlas, who I've grown a great appreciation for. He's now one of my top five favorite wrestlers, going back looking at his stuff. But he said
Can I just stop you right there real quick? Because I remember Tony Atlas asking if he could stick his fist. Never mind.
Yeah, inside
just keep
of
going.
You. Yeah, inside
you.
Of you. No, and he never said that to me. He knows a real man when he sees one. But when he saw a half a man, he had to. He couldn't resist the offer of sticking his fist inside of you. It's amazing, Bruce, with the type of response you get from individuals. You know, it's an amazing thing to have witnessed. And you know, think about it, from Philadelphia to San Jose, you always got a wonderful offer to have Tony Atlas inside of you, and you never took him up on that offer, and I don't understand why.
No, thank you.
It would have been magical.
Perfect. We'll save that for Pat Patterson. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, those guys did make a lot of money. And it's funny because Tony was saying that he thinks that Vince has it harder now paying for flights and stuff like that and transportation, whereas the wrestler incurred that responsibility today. So just a very interesting thing. But, you know, it's funny because we talk about how we prefer the wrestling of the old days. But one of the things is that those guys did less moves, but they still tore their body up. It seems like even worse. I know that we haven't, you know, because of where we're at now, we haven't seen the fruits of the modern day wrestler because they're all still relatively young. You know, anybody within the past 10 or 15 years, the telltale sign would be in the next 10 to 15 years to see if all of these high spots and all that, how it works out. But these guys did less moves and they still tore their bodies up. And I think a lot of it was because of the equipment. The wrestling rings were harder than they were today. And I think that it was also the amount of, you know, they would do, what, 5 or 6 shows sometimes within a week, which I think is what contributed to the deterioration of their body. So it's just funny that they were less athletic in a way, to an extent, but and what it seems like they're more beat up than the more athletic wrestler, which is they're always taking high spot bumps and stuff like that. But I think the ring and padding and stuff is the contributing factor.
But think about, look at Hulk Hogan with that leg drop, and think about how that shortened potential. I mean, he wrestled for a long time, but he's paying for it now because that thing, you're jumping up in the air and basically landing on a piece of wood. All of the weight of your body is crushing down on your spine. And that is, I think people don't realize that. That, like, yeah, he's not flipping off the top rope and doing a triple moonsault, but he is crushing down on that 300 pounds or crushing the 300 pounds of weight down on his spine. And no wonder he has back problems and hip problems.
And if you really take a look at it, he really Hogan was not a lazy wrestler when it came to the leg drop. I mean, he really made an art out of selling it, you know, most often. And when he was a young man, I mean, he really had some height to it. And like you said, it's a ridiculously devastating move on one's personal body. And it really is I don't look at it the same. I used to love watching the leg drop, but I cringe now. There's certain moves that I cringe when I watch, and that's one of them. And you know, the other one being the pile driver or anything where you're supposedly ramming a guy's head into the ground. The margin for error is so small, and the effects can be so crippling and devastating that it's very scary. DDT is another one. You know, it's a slight alteration, and bam, you know, somebody, I mean, it was a DDT-like situation. I think it was with the Rockers, where that guy was, they were fighting some jobbers, and the one jobber was, he was partially crippled off of that. And it really was like a DDT type move, and the guy came the wrong way, and bam, that was the end of his. You know, I think he was like not like a bodybuilder, but something he did with health, and I mean, his career was changed. You know, after that, and maybe that's another thing. Jobbers, should they come back? Will that help break up the constant fighting of one-on-one wrestlers? Or you know, but will the audience like it? That's a good question. I know you got to go to a call. How do you feel about that? Would the audience appreciate a professional wrestler periodically facing a jobber today?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I started noticing, and I think that's the influence of Bruce Pritchard being back in WWE and being in a high position. But they're starting to do that. So with the Viking Raiders, with some of the big monstrous guys, they're bringing back jobbers to really get these guys over. I was listening to one of the podcasts. It might have been Steve Austin, or it could have been Bischoff or Pritchard. But anyway, they said that the reason that they went away from the quote-unquote town jobbers, the guys, the local guys in the town, were it just that. So the guy that took the rocker dropper, he wasn't they didn't know much about him. It was just, hey, a wrestling school said that you can use these guys as enhancement talent for your TV, and he didn't know how to take the bump, and he gets massively hurt. And so they started going more towards, you know, jobbers to the stars, you know, the guys like Barry Horowitz and Steve Lombardi. It was guys that they knew could work.
Right. Which, you know, but see, that's the thing there. And so is the answer in, you know, keeping the jobbers more close to home now? And also, you revealed some information to me, because I don't watch the modern product, so I didn't know they have like jobbers like in wrestling today. So that's actually... Okay. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. I think that breaks the monotony of always having a guy face a guy. It takes away from what's special when the guys finally do meet up. If they're feuding every week and they're fighting each other every week, where's the buildup? So I'm actually glad to hear that. And again, a little bit of that old school savvy is what's going to, I think, help wrestling.
And real quick, before we go to Rat Boy, that also, the jobbers helped to accent the finishing move. Like, that was part of that enhancement talent's job, was to make the finishing moves, the DDTs, the pile driver, whether it was a side slam like Tino Bravo. It looked devastating when you got this 200-pound guy that was just, you know, like rubber, you know, bouncing off the mat with those moves.
Right. I agree. That's something that I'm actually really glad to hear that they're bringing that back. And I think the best way to manage that, like, you know, mentioning the story that I told that you confirmed why they moved away from it, is to bring it closer to home. You know, WWE has a lot of resources, and AEW has a lot of backing. Maybe they need to really, you know, work on, you know, just bringing guys in, making sure they're qualified, and then going from there. It doesn't have to be an every day or every week situation, but finding a way to bring them in, to break the monotony so that wrestling doesn't have to be so stagnant.
Totally agree. Let's go to New Jersey and our boy, you're my friend, Rat Boy, and the VOC Nation Radio Network. What's up, man?
Is that Namar Wells?
It certainly is, Chris Gorish.
Oh, my God, I don't believe this. You finally came out of the woodwork, huh?
I did, man. I've been living abroad for the past couple of years, you know. I've been jet flying, you know, kiss stealing, wheeling and dealing, and I decided to come back and deal with all you, you know, you everyday folk for one night
That's
only.
Right. You know, now, dude, the family reunion's got to get together again. Me, you, Albert, Bill Lafner, Brady, we all got to get together and do it one more time than Atlanta, brother.
Oh, see, I was with you till you said Atlanta. And then I had, like, you know, I started having flashbacks of, you know, the Waffle House and and wanted to put Bruce through the window at the Waffle House. You know, that was rough. But those were fun times. I remember dropping you off at the where did he stay at, Bruce? That was funny.
He was in a different hotel. I forget forgetting where exactly he was, but he was in a hotel not too far from ours.
You guys dragging me to strip clubs and stuff like that, it was unbelievable, you know.
Whoa.
I was getting action at the place, and you guys wanted, you know, took me from my action. I wanted to thank you from that. You know, I never got it. You know, that was horrible. And then I had to, the strip club, this for all you guys don't know, so they wanted to go to a strip club. So they go to a strip club, and I'm waiting outside like a noob, and I'm talking to the people outside that run the club.
When you guys dropped me off.
Yeah, we dropped Chris off, so he didn't make it. And
yeah,
Chris, you didn't.
I had a date with somebody.
That's true, with yourself. And then, so they were selling water. Right. Yeah, but they were selling waters, and I remember they sold me a water that had been opened and refilled with tap water. And I was so thirsty. I said, "This is the most disgusting thing I've ever been involved in, but I'm going to drink this water because it was Atlanta, it was hot, and it was the middle of the night and on a Saturday or whatever, and I just wanted something to drink while I was waiting for those guys to finish up. But they had literally, because you know it didn't have the clickety click, that you know the protective seal, and the water taste, you could tell the difference. It was tap water, and I was mortified, but I was so thirsty from waiting outside. It was unbelievable. But you know,
when you brought up, call me Atlas about that, okay, about Atlanta and all this other stuff, okay, I'm going to tell you, Tony Atlas was going to lick my face that day because I didn't have no cake on my face.
That, are you sure he to lick your face?
No, what happened was that he was there in Atlanta at the convention, right, while you guys were at the table. I walked over there. He was talking about, man, this little guy in a yellow shirt, he was in the ring with Superfly Snooker, and he got cake in his face. I should have walked up to him and licked his face. I turned around. I said, "You're talking about me." He said, "Yeah, there he is, but no cake in his face."
Another missed opportunity.
When I first came back to do the show, Rat Boy called in and he had a wish list and he said, "I want to hear from." He mentioned Nanny. I said no. He mentioned Albert, which we did, and he mentioned you, and I said never. It's never going to happen. And the final week before we changed the formats, we did it. We got together. Here we are.
That's right.
I'm here.
Hey, Rat Boy, I'm going to ask you about the 80s in a second, but you mentioned strip clubs tomorrow, and I'll forget about it if I don't say it. Do you remember the time, I won't mention the establishment, but Albert drug us to a strip club somewhere in Philadelphia, and we were drugged, and I remember driving home, and like, you know, this is not safe, boys and girls, so don't try this, but I drove home, and I realized, like, I just like snapped into it, and
good,
I was
miles. Right.
Yeah, miles past my exit. Don't say the name of the club. I don't want to get sued. But we believe we were drunk.
That was a very very, we all had some odd moments. I went home and passed out, and I remember not waking up till like 2 o'clock the next day, and that's something that I never did. It was just mind blowing, and we knew that, you know, we were served. They were complimentary drinks, and I don't drink alcohol. I mean, I'm not. When I say that, I'm not opposed to drinking alcohol. It's just I don't like alcohol. But if somebody, you know, buys me a beer or something, I will sip on it because I feel bad that they spent their money to buy me something they may not have known. So they gave us these shots, and so I said, well, okay, I can at least take a shot. And I'll never forget calling Bruce the next day and said, man, I've never slept like that before in my life. I said, I came home and I just passed out. And Bruce says that he was just driving aimlessly for miles on the highway and realized he was awake, but he came to. Man, if somebody could explain that, if you can understand that, and we're Facebook friends with that guy and his establishment to this day. God bless him.
Wait a minute. Insanity. Wasn't that go-go bar was across the way from the piano bar?
It might have been, but I will not confirm or deny. Rat Boy, what's your favorite feud from the 1980s?
Oh, man. There's two of them that I did go and saw. All right. And they were back-to-back. Okay. Down in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I went to WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5. And there were some great matches there, but I like the, I'm going with WrestleMania 4, okay? And I'm going with Randy Savage, with Elizabeth, defeated Ted DiBiase with Andre the Giant in his corner.
Now, let me ask you guys, Namar, Ted DiBiase, shouldn't Ted DiBiase have been given a run with the WWE title? Like, that guy was just great.
See, I hate that. I know you aren't that kind of person, but I hear that so often, especially from Hogan haters, that somebody's favorite wrestler who was extremely talented, they hate Hogan because the guy didn't get a run at the title. And my thing to that is that, no, he didn't need the title. It worked out perfectly with him never acquiring it and making his own million-dollar title. That was, to me, was brilliant. That's the brilliance of the 80s. Like, you know, and it's funny because who's the guy? I don't know if he was Spanish. He was a couple of years ago. If he was Spanish or Middle Eastern, I'm sorry to be referring him to it by his nationality. He was a wrestler. He's supposed to have been rich. And he would drive.
Alberto?
Yeah.
Alberto Rio.
Yes. The most they could do was give him a stupid new car every week. Like, they didn't even know how to play that up. I mean, Ted really played it up. They had vignettes. He had in-the-ring stuff with the fans doing goofy stuff. And even if they repeated history with Alberto doing those type of things or similar things, that would have been great. Only thing they had him do was to show up and drive to the ring. He would literally drive, what, like 10 feet? And that would be the extent of building his character as this rich, you know, something or another. And they really could have fleshed that out. They could have taken the original 80s storyline with Million Dollar Man and really taken it farther with having him paying guys to try to take the top guys out so he can get the title, and the legit wrestlers really fighting off the guys he was paying off to take them out. But they never did it. The extent was just him, you know, driving a car 10 feet and acting like that was something, you know, a rental car no less, like that was something amazing. But yeah, I don't think Ted needed a belt. I think him getting the million-dollar belt, that was where it was. I think that was perfect that he didn't get it because he was like, his character demanded that he was like, well, crap, I'm going to make my own. And it's going to be even more lavish and ridiculous than the main belt.
I got my own.
Yeah, but there's one thing, though. That Ted DiBiase got to drop that Burger Boy, though. That's one thing.
Wait, what?
The Burger Boy.
Bruce, can you translate?
I have no idea.
All right. The Burger Boy. Hamburger Boy. I got hamburgers out in the parking lot. I'm showing them. You want to buy one?
Virgil. You're talking about Virgil.
Yes.
When did Virgil
Burger
have
Boy.
Did Virgil ever sell burgers in the parking lot? Is that something, Rat Boy? Did I miss that?
Yeah, you missed it, man. He was actually out in the parking lot selling burgers at one of the events here in Trenton.
Oh,
wow.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Now, that's
Virgil's
a guy.
Good. Go ahead.
No,
you
I
missed
said, that's
out
a guy.
On
I mean,
it, man.
Listen, and Rat Boy, I'm going to put you on the sidelines for a second. Thanks for the call. Namar, that's a guy. Virgil was the first, out of all the people on SummerSlam 88, Virgil is the first guy that you see when the pay-per-view starts.
Listen, that's how they had to cook you. You know, you knew you couldn't wait for that match to end, so that's what you were anticipating. How do we go on from there? You know, and thinking about even the 80s, like we go, what was the WrestleMania where Macho fought Ric Flair?
Oh,
for the heavyweight.
Seven or
was
eight.
That nine?
I think it was, no, it was eight because Hogan and Sid was the final match and the title match. There were people that complained that was the title match and it should have been the main event, but Hogan and Sid was.
Right. Now, again, there's two guys that they kept apart for a very long time. And with, I think their style, you know, it did work together to an extent. And, again, I think that was a great match. Keeping those guys apart and really building a story, it really told something, you know, and I think that is something that is, again, lost in wrestling, you know, because, I guess, I don't know if they share the same type of architect, but I think there's certain similarities with the lavishness, or at least early Randy Savage, which made the fight with Ric Flair good. And I mean, and then you had Bobby Heenan in perfect, accenting Ric Flair, which really helped, you know, not that Ric Flair, we know he can stand on his own, but Bobby Heenan in perfect working with him was just beautiful.
Well, didn't Heenan just bring another level? So everybody he worked with, he just brought them to another level. Now, I mean, Flair is one thing, but everybody, I mean, Rick Rude and Hercules, think about all the guys, and Rick Rude probably would have been fine himself, but Hercules was a guy. If Bobby Heenan wasn't there, Hercules is never outside of the lower mid card. But think about the work that Bobby Heenan did and how many guys he made in the 80s.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, just like the tag teams. I don't know, last time I was watching wrestling, they really didn't have tag teams or managers. Those things work. They help. You know, a manager that, you know, really looks at it like an investment is, you know, or trains or has a stable or a family, that really means something. And especially if you have a super talented guy, and I mean, and Bobby Heenan was the quintessential manager. You know, I mean, he really played the part. He lived that part, and that's what could benefit wrestling today is to have individuals like that who know. I mean, Paul Bearer. I was watching an old match with Paul Bearer. And again, it was a Kane versus Mankind. It's one of my favorite matches. It's one of those red matches where it was all red, and Kane beats the living daylights out of Mankind. But Paul Bearer, the brief moments where the camera gets on Paul Bearer, and he knows just what to do. The commentary is hilarious between, JR and the King, which also, again, helps bring the flavor. They call Paul Bearer a disgusting, nasty man, and they say it in such a dry, realistic way. It's hilarious. And even I was watching a match, I think it's a great match. Bruce, we actually talked about it with Jim the Anvil Neidhart before he passed, when we one of our many interviews with him, and I mentioned to him about his solo match against Randy Savage when he was still the tag team with the Hart Foundation. And, you know, Scary Sherry, Sensational Sherry, when she knew the camera was on her, you know, she knew how to act. All she did was say, "Come on, Randy," but the way she said it is so hilarious, and the way she looked and played it up, it sends me into hysterics every time that I watch that match. And she knew what to give and how to play her part, and she could take the bumps. And then you look at even Slick. I mean, the goofy, just Slick coming into the ring or playing up that Akeem was his brother from Africa, you know, or and dancing when he got into the ring, or even the I think it's the SD Jones and King Kong Bundy match with Jimmy Hart. When he hits SD with the avalanche, Jimmy Hart is leaping into the air, spinning around like a ballerina, and he's so excited. It's those things, those really being able to act and deliver a character in a character-driven situation is what makes these little accents that make professional wrestling wonderful and truly an entertainment force. And I just don't see it today. They don't have it. They don't take those kind of risks.
Well, the funny thing is that you mentioned Akeem, and it made me think about how Vince used to do so many things to just mess with Dusty Rhodes back in the day, because Dusty, you know, was part of the NWA. And, you know, he names Virgil Ted's bodyguard. He names Virgil, which is Dusty's real name. And then, you know, Dusty was the American Dream, and he used to shuck and jive in the ring. And then you have Akeem, who's the African Dream, coming down and doing the same kind of dancing. I never thought about that as a rib on Dusty Rhodes, but I heard some of the people saying that recently, and I watched it with a different eye, you know? I watched it with a different lens.
You know, that's something that I never even noticed, too. So you telling me that, it's like, it's now I'm going to have a new awareness, because for as much as I live in the old school, that's not something that I picked up on or have heard. So I'm actually glad you just mentioned that, because when you said it, it's like all the light bulbs just clicked on. I'm like, oh, yeah, absolutely. The African Dream and doing those goofy dances, you know, all of that type of stuff. Just wow. And that's what made it so great. The little things like that are actually turned out to be really big things. And we know that Vince is not a perfect monolith. You know, not everything he's done is great. And there were a lot of wrestlers, take Vader or, you know, the Road Warriors, their time in the WWF was completely wasted and blown, you know, but there were some moments of absolute brilliance back then. Absolute brilliance.
You remember Rio Rogers? They had him as Vince's color guy for a couple weeks back in maybe the early 90s.
Not at all. You're good all for right, remembering. So once you start hitting the 90s, I'm lost. You're good at remembering those little characters like that.
So this is after Jesse exited the company in the early 90s. They had Piper for a little bit, and then Vince had this guy named Rio Rogers, which was actually Bruce Pritchard. So it was post-Brother Love. You have to look up Rio Rogers on YouTube, because it is totally a over-the-top parody on Dusty Rhodes.
I can't wait. And Rio, I'm actually putting it in now. I know that I can't play it, but I'll have it queued up. That is, you know, I can't wait to see that, because I did not even know that they did that. And that was around the time that I started to check out.
Let me see if I can. Let me see if I can do this. Here we go. Let's see. Hold on. I have to. For some reason. So here's the go figure. It's coming up on my my earbuds that aren't connected. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rio Rogers, who claims to be a direct descendant of Roy Rogers, baby. The legendary Roy Rogers. You know, with Tigger, Dale, roast beef sandwiches.
Roast beef and trigger.
Yeah.
Sure, all right. I'm not going to buy that, Rio. I don't believe so.
Well, how about my fourth uncle three times removed, Rio? Uncle Rio.
Hey, can you hear the Dusty in that?
Yes, absolutely. That, you know, it's funny, because as soon as he started, it just made me think of when Dustin did the spot on his father. And, of course, it fell flat. The wrestling fans look like they had no clue what was going on. You know, Jerry Lawler got it. But it ended up being one of the best moments of all time in WWE history. You know, parodying the character, but doing it the right way. There's some awful ways it could be done. But that is just wow, you know. It's hilarious.
Vince had a just a special way of shitting on the competition. I think back to, you know, Harley Race was just a monster in the NWA and just one of the greatest of all time. And they came and they put him in a purple crown and a purple robe and, you know, made him into a joke. The Junkyard Dog was huge in Mid-South, and he was nothing more than a mid-carder. Like, Vince wanted to show
you,
that
you
his
know, we,
guy.
You know, we got into that one time with it was me, you, the Devil, and Albert. And, I shouldn't say that. That was pretty rude of me, referring to that man as the Devil. But anyway,
Eric is a good guy and was my
very
co-host
bad man
for many weeks. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You
I'm
know, everybody sees it, but anyway, you guys mocked me for saying that JYD was not the number two guy in WWF during the mid-80s, and that is not even true. He was insanely popular, and he couldn't wrestle for lick, or his better days had been behind him by 84. That I truly admit, he was a character, but for his time that he was there, he was... like, who was the number two guy as far as popularity that was a good guy? It was Junkyard Dog. He made the cartoon, and you just watched the audiences when he came out. He was, you know, he did that to himself, you know. And I give Harley Race credit. I think because they wouldn't give him the title, they had to give him something, so they made him the king. So, I mean, you know, the purple was ridiculous, though. That's up for... If you think it's silly, then that means they did something wrong along the way, regardless.
Well, I think you were also trying to defend Coco Beware, and I think that's where we all had to put a dose of reality, because Coco won three matches
on
TV.
Think about it. Was he or was he not one of the original high flyers? He most certainly was. Who were the high flyers in 86?
Nuka.
Okay.
Snooker,
and what?
Right?
Okay. If you say Snooker, then Coco Beware did more high flying than Snooker did in the WWF at the time.
Oh, 100%. I agree with you there. I mean, Coco was.
Well, you guys disagreed with me. You guys disagreed with me back then about that. That's where the argument came in. I didn't say Coco Beware was a heavyweight champion, actually, which is ironic to find out. I think he was in some other territories. But, you know, but no, I think I say he was one of the original WWF high flyers. I would say anybody that consistently went to the top rope or did flips or whatever, or, you know, flying, press slam, stuff like that, those guys I think are, you know, they were the high flyers of the day. You know, Snooker had one move, basically high flying move, Macho Man and Coco Beware. I think they were the three at the time.
Coco was a heavyweight high flyer, and that's what I don't think you appreciate that back, or you appreciated that back then. At least I didn't, because Vince was always into the big guys, and a lot of the guys that, because you looked at people that were smaller than Hogan, and you felt like they were small guys, but Coco was 230 or 240 and bulky and muscular. And he was a high flyer. Steamboat was the same way. Steamboat was huge.
You're right. I mean, if you really, like you said, Hogan was so big, and, you know, because he was the hero, it gave you that false illusion. But you're right. Those guys were tough, and they were huge, and they don't get a credit, you know, enough credit for, you know, the moves that they did for their size. Absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, we can summarize the 80s by saying it was definitely an era of giants, and the thing about the 80s was that even the small guys were, in essence, they were giants. It's crazy how that ended up working back in those days. And you would look at a guy like Coco or Ricky Steamboat, or I think about Davey Boy Smith, like next to Shawn Michaels. Years later, Davey Boy was a monster. But when you looked at him against the rest of the competition in the 80s and the tag team, he was just another guy.
Yeah, I mean, what, Nikolai Volkoff was what, 6'3", 6'4"? So you're right. Next, you don't realize how big those guys are until you put it in a perspective in your own personal life. You know, your own height or people you may know, but you're right. I mean, Davey Boy Smith was like, you know, I mean, he was short, but he was huge. You know, he was like a Coco. They were like little mini Mack trucks.
It's amazing. But anyway, to wrap it all up, Namar, that was just such a great period in wrestling. We'll never live it again live, but the cool thing is the WWE Network exists. It's $10 a month, $9.99, whatever it is, and you can relive everything almost sequentially. Like, you can go back and watch Saturday night's main event. You can watch WrestleMania. The only thing I hate is they dub over the music. You know, I like the old music, but they don't want to pay the rights fees.
Yeah, that's something that I can't. It's very hard for me to watch, a Hulk Hogan match from 1984 and Real American is playing. Like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And I'd rather go watch a grainy tape with the original music, and even because the crowd noise is also dubbed over in those cases. And you can just tell it's not authentic. And it really takes away.
Just you quickly, not the 80s, but you look it back at WrestleMania, I think it's 18, Hogan and The Rock, they completely go away from, I think Hogan actually in when it was live, he came down to Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix, and for some reason they didn't want to pay the rights fees, so they dubbed that over with the NWO music. And it totally messes up the crowd noise, and it takes away from the experience, because that was the shocker. Like, Hogan came to the ring with massive cheers in the Sky Dome.
Right, and you don't feel that. You really don't feel that with the overdub, because and which is funny, because that's what why it doesn't work is because the once the audio goes back to being true. It's a big shift in difference, and you could tell people know. You know, it's like a practical effect versus a CGI effect. You can tell the difference. You know, there's always going to be some missing weight to it. So, yeah, and I think in some cases they overdubbed it with the NWO music, right?
Yeah, yeah. The generic.
Yeah, it just. Right, and it just doesn't. Yeah, it's completely flat. Like, they didn't even take the time to even really master it correctly, to really even like to try to bring in the hype or the true sense of the experience. And that's why, you know, for a lot of times I will personally settle for an original grainy tape of, you know, MSG or Spectrum Wrestling program, so that I can get the authenticity of what it felt like. I love the spirit of the time that, you know, and doesn't even in the 90s, if they were to do that with anything from the 90s, it would still have the same effect on me. I would not want to hear anything but what was truly original.
Well, and I mean, they do crazy stuff. Like, for a period of time, they bleeped out all Jesse Ventura commentary. That was silly because of the dispute over rights fees. They bleep out. Did you ever see on the when in the WWE Network where it has superstars of wrestling, they bleep out wrestling? So the sign just says superstars.
Oh, like, yeah, Vince has, they fade out the WWF in the old footage as well, which is ridiculous.
The logo.
So, like,
yep.
Yeah, which is that is absurd to me.
It's crazy. Well, listen, we're at the end of our time. I had a lot of fun. I always do when I get together with you. There's just a chemistry there, and I appreciate you jumping back in and hanging out for a week. This was a lot of fun.
It sure enough was. It's a shame, though. I feel like, though, when I do come on, it's always the same topic. We're talking about old wrestling. Hogan dominates it. So maybe next time, if you need me, you know, to cover for somebody or whatever, I can at least, what I can do is at least watch the last aired program, which might be a Raw probably, because that airs on a Monday. I can at least watch that and get a fresh eyes perspective, and you know, to try to mix it up, because we always end up in the same place, because you guys know I live and breathe and swim in 80s to early 90s wrestling, so to break that, if we can get ahead of it, I'll try to watch the newer product, and you know, we have something a little bit different to talk about.
There we go. We do this every, like, 2 years. So in 2 years, the next time that we talk, if Raw is still on, that's where we'll go.
All right. And for your son, what are you going to name him?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't like to give these disgusting wrestling fans an insight into my personal life. I don't know yet, though. I'm not sure. I was thinking about either Malcolm, maybe Chris. I'm not sure. One of those two.
I can't wait. I know one of those guys, they would probably lose their ish if that were to ever happen. But congratulations on that.
Brady work.
Yeah, I like that. You know, they're actually, I know we got to go. There is a guy, his name is Brady. He had a great match against Macho Man in like 86 or 87. If you can look, guys can look that up. That's a great match. He was a jobber. He had a lot of potential, and even Bobby Heenan was giving him credit. He was commentating, giving him credit until, you know, it was his time to start losing, and Bobby completely trashes him and says, "Oh, I made a mistake. He's terrible." But it actually was a very good match.
Brady Boone?
Yes. That's him. At the SM. Yep, great match with him and Macho Man. I really enjoyed it. He put Macho through the ringer at the beginning of the match, which was pretty good.
Awesome stuff. Well, listen, tomorrow you got Wes Briscoe's debut on VOC Nation. The Maestro's on Thursday nights as well, from WCW. In the Room every Tuesday. David Lane's got Wrestling with Problems on Wednesday. I'll be back on October the 2nd with my brand new co-host, who is a former WWF backstage interviewer in the 1980s. You'll have to stay tuned. I will announce it right here next week. Not Sean Mooney. He's got his own show. He doesn't need mine.
Listen, right. Bruce, has been a lot of fun. You take care. God bless you all.
Tomorrow, God bless. A lot of fun. Talk to everybody in a couple of weeks. This is VOC Nation Wrestling with History worldwide on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Joey Stubbs. What's going on, Joey?
You know, for somebody who makes his living on radio, you have a hard time stringing together words. You all right?
I was trying to make a point. I'm using football as a soliloquy.
You really have a way with words.
Rat Boy didn't even want to call in last week since you weren't here, so.
And the very first person that was ever in the ring was an amateur, is Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman was not an NCAA champion.
Oh my God.
I am heartbroken. I don't know why you're laughing.
Albert, you're a freeloader.
It is. It's buzzed around the world. Twitter blew up. Facebook blew up.
It's the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. What's going on, Jimmy?
Well, you never know. Telephone, telegraph, and tell the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, we're full of all kind of surprises.
This is a honky-tonk man, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time in the WWE, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
You know why you don't want me on your radio show? Because you know the ratings will go through the roof. You'd make a lot of money, and that way you keep me off. That way you will stay always broken.